Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. And let me tell you, our discussion today is going to be a very interesting one. Do you believe in UFOs? Have you ever had an experience with one? Well, my guest, Dr. Lynn Katai, she has just absolutely amazing documentation. But more than that, her story is a fascinating one. We've got the book, The Phoenix Lights, here. And the subtitle on it is A Skeptic's Discovery That We're Not Alone. Lynn, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Now, do you mind me calling you Lynn? I didn't want to...
I go by Dr. Lynn because Kitai, spelled K-I-T-E-I, is a little complicated for people, so I usually go under Dr. Lynn. So
that's wonderful. Well, Dr. Lynn, I really was intrigued by your material. You know, there's so much... I'll call it stuff out there, and there's a lot of people that get involved with hype, they make things up, and of course, the research and the writings about UFOs, which means unidentified flying objects, has been around forever. You, however, on March 13th, 1997, had an experience that was to totally change your life in ways that you never dreamed of. Tell us what happened.
Actually, it was before that. It was 2 years before that. Really?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I had a very close sighting to our home. And as you mentioned, just so the audience knows, I mean, I had no interest or knowledge in this topic at all until we did have a very close sighting to our home. My husband's also a physician, and I witnessed three amber orbs in a triangle formation a little below us. We live pretty high in the mountains surrounding Phoenix, and I happened to get pictures of it, didn't know what this advanced technology was doing right outside our bedroom window, but wondered for 2 years what it was doing here, what it was. And actually 2 months before the mass sighting, this was 2 years later, in January of 97, these orbs came back again, but at a distance, and I started documenting them again on film. As a scientist, I felt compelled to document them, and anybody that's interested out there and wants to take a look at my unique photo collection, it's on www.thephoenixlights.net on the photo page, because I happened to catch the same phenomena in the same location as thousands of people would see 2 months later, head-on turning into a V-shape in January of 97. The pictures are extraordinary in and of themselves, but looking for a logical explanation, I called around the next morning, found air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport, saw the same thing at the same time, did not show up on radar. They were actually hovering in Class B restricted airspace, which is a 30-mile radius around the center of the airport. So they should have called into the tower, and they did not. And in their own words, described them as six points of light, totally equidistant from each other, massive span, over a mile wide, that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, turning. And my pictures show it actually head-on and turning. So we were looking at the same thing at the same time, and then slowly moving behind South Mountain. And when I asked them, well, what was it? There was silence, and finally one of the air traffic controllers said, beats me, and I said, you're air traffic controllers, you're supposed to know what's in our airspace, and they were just as fascinated, and I continued to take pictures up into and including the night of March 13th, 1997, which was a very clear, beautiful night when thousands of people were actually looking skyward purposely to catch a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp Comet, and they also caught a glimpse of this either mile to 2 mile wide, in some reports, lights that seemed to be attached to something, and other people, actually thousands of people, saw craft, very low altitude, about rooftop, moving very slowly, just gliding non-threateningly about 30 miles an hour. And some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed, incredible technology to be sure. And actually there were some that reported that these orbs detached from the main object, went out into the environment, and then redocked with it. It was just an incredible thing when you really started, learning what happened throughout the state. And this is for many hours. It wasn't one or two events. There were many events happening simultaneously throughout the entire state, from as early as 5:20 till 5:30 the next morning. So something really woke me up to, whoa, now thousands of people had seen what I had seen. I learned a week later that this is happening worldwide, which I had no idea. And we're talking many, many countries, and even in the early 90s, Belgium came to the United States when they were having their similar sightings and asked if we were doing it, and we flatly denied that we were. Mm-hmm. And they worked very closely with the university and civilians and military, which is kind of a model for what we should be doing. But UK and Hudson Valley, New York, very similar sightings, and even recent sightings, Stephenville, Texas, and so forth. This is happening worldwide. But anyway, I started to keep a journal, and a very, very meticulous journal of everything, of military non-reaction. There was no investigation, no explanation for months, and I went down to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, ASU, Arizona State University, Geology, Anthropology, Mathematics, Astronomy Departments, as well as the Brooks Institute of Photography in Santa Barbara, and no one could give me an answer for what these phenomena were. In fact, we don't have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, but that doesn't mean they're not real. We may just be looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency. But anyway, I continue to document not only pictures, but as much data as I could find of similar sightings, of a history of all this. I mean, it's fascinating when you just look into that alone. And I ended up with a 750-page journal 4 years later after pushing my entire professional medical career, successful medical career aside. And what's very ironic about this, I have to share, is that I have dedicated my life's work for over 30 years to community education of vital health issues, including prevention education programs that are now being distributed by Discovery Education. And when this fell in my lap, I did a lot of soul searching. I stayed anonymous for 7 years, but ultimately, not only because the science of it is so important, the data is so important to share, or could be so important to share, but also there's healing to be had, because so many people, as you probably know, have had extraordinary experiences that are real to them. And even though most things can be explained, people let it fester for many, many years. I have thousands of emails from people who have had experiences as children, as I did, actually. And, you know, they're afraid to tell anybody because of the ridicule and ostracizing and so forth. So there were a number of reasons why I finally came forward. But since I have in 2004, I haven't looked back.
Well, and I can respect that. I think whenever we have any experience of this dimension, it totally transforms our lives in a way of expansion that we would never have envisioned. This is not something that throws you backward. It actually propels you forward with a force that you are not going to anticipate in any way, shape, or form. Now, I want people to know that you've been called the woman pioneer of medical communications in TV Guide magazine because you created and produced innovative TV news health reports for NBC in Philadelphia in 1976. And like you said, you've been involved for over 30 years in working with people, trying to make them aware of so many things. For something like this to happen to you, here you are a professional. You have a great deal of understanding of so many things that in our world many people would not have an awareness of because of your education. And you're thrown into this tailspin of something so much bigger than what you have ever expected to experience. You mentioned, though, that you had had an experience when you were a little girl. What was that child's experience that you went through?
I'm glad you brought that up, Don. I have to tell you, because one of the roads that I actually took off of the main road in my inquiry was that when I had interviewed a number of witnesses, they shared with me, to the Phoenix Lights, they shared with me that they had had childhood near-death experiences that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And I found that very poignant because I did too. And I started to look into the possibility. I thought, geez, could there possibly be a connection between all unexplained phenomena, be it near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena, that have a mystical light associated with the experience? And lo and behold, when I started looking again, I started finding very credible information at university level. The Omega Project by Dr. Kenneth Ring, extremely complicated and like a 3-inch book, but nonetheless, that he was finding a connection, as well as Dr. Raymond Fowler and Dr. Bruce Grayson, and on at university level. Well, that really took me aback, because when I really started looking at it, not only, and I lay it out very simply in the book, not only is the experience itself very similar, when you really look at the data speaks for itself, but the after effect, as you just said, the awakening, the positive transformation that happens within an individual that is so profound, life-changing, life-altering forever. Your whole worldview changes, and you feel a connection to the phenomena, to the earth, to the universe, and to each other that's so much more intimate. And I started calling all unexplained phenomena UPS, U-P, and up, because they are so positive, and what's happened to people here, and it's so fascinating, and actually most of my book is about this, is that they've changed lives forever in a positive way. And I should mention that in 13 years, we just celebrated the 13th anniversary, there has not been not one report of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights event. So that in itself is telling, but when you look at the people themselves, and the transformation that's happened within an individual who truly experiences an up. So of course, everybody comes from a different background, different upbringing, different belief system, and some people can't deal with it and don't want to deal with it, and that's okay. If they want to feed into a logical explanation like flares or balloons or blimps or whatever, that's okay. Everyone in their own time. But the data is out there if you want to learn about it. And I found also with people that just have a thirst to learn about these things, and really approach it with an open mind and an open heart, they too have this positive transformation. We've had people here that were Phoenix Lights witnesses that are now very involved with the peace movement, with the environmental movement. It's really changed their lives forever.
Yes, it does. Now, let's go a little bit back into history. You do a very nice job in your book about a brief history regarding UFOs, and you felt that it was significant, and I agree, because contrary to what a lot of archaeological discoveries have designated as the amount of time of people being on this planet, we've been here for millions of years, and so they're discovering things as our technology has advanced and people have been in a positioning to go to certain areas in the world. They find things, and you talk about Pakistan.
Yes.
And
yes.
What was found in Pakistan?
Actually, in Pakistan and other places around the world, they have been finding primitive caves where there are drawings etched out in the stone of long extinct animals, and in the sky there's what we would call today a UFO. Well, how did they know what to even put it there, to even draw an illustration of that? How did they know unless they had seen something and they were drawing what they had seen? And when we go to the 15th and 16th centuries, certainly there are paintings and frescoes where people are on the ground looking up in the sky, and there's what very evident what we would call today as UFOs. And when we look in the Bible, we see, stories about these orbs, and throughout the Bible, as well as Ezekiel's wheel and on and on. And even in World War II, each side thought the other side had this advanced technology, these orbs in rock-solid formation going around their planes. And it wasn't until after the war that Japan and Germany and the United States realized that nobody had this advanced technology. So what were they? What were they doing there? And I want to share one other thing, Donna, that's really very interesting. And if you look at my pictures again and again, these phenomena keep showing up in an area where South Mountain, which is just behind the airport, and there's a basin in between South Mountain and a little further on, miles away, is the Estrella Mountain Range. And there's a point where they intersect, and that's where these things keep popping up for me that I have caught on 35 millimeter and video. And by the way, I've been told over and over again that no one ever in history has actually documented, both on 35 millimeter and video, these global unexplained phenomena prior to, during, and after an historic mass sighting. And that was another reason that I really had to do a lot of soul searching, and a good conscience I couldn't stick this data in a drawer. But at any rate, in between those two mountain ranges is a basin called the Gila River Indian Reservation. And serendipitously, and I have to tell you that I have come not to believe in coincidence, there's just too many things that have happened since the mass sighting that seem to be puzzle pieces just falling in line. But at any rate, I was invited to share my substance abuse prevention education program 6 months before the mass sighting at the Gila Bend Indian Reservation School. And they don't really talk to outsiders much, but I got friendly with them. And after the mass sighting, I went back and said, you know, these pictures that I've been taking of these strange phenomena seem to be showing up in that area close to your reservation, which is very sacred ground, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I said, did anybody happen to see strange lights on March 13th? And they started to giggle. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call mm-hmm. them sky people, light beings. It's part of their culture. I had no idea. And when I started looking into that aspect, there are indigenous cultures worldwide, even today, that believe that these orbs are spirit world, that they invite them in. They even have, the Hopis have protocols to invite these spirits or orbs, whatever, these phenomena, into their lives, into their homes. They feel that they give them comfort and inspiration and knowledge. And when you look at that aspect alone, it is so fascinating. I mean, maybe they got something right here, and we should really take a look at indigenous peoples and their beliefs, not only that there are other intelligences out there along with ours, and certainly quantum physics is starting to catch up with, our science really needs to take a look at this as a real science question, because with quantum mechanics and quantum physics, we're just learning that there could be a dozen different dimensions out there, if not more. And when we talk about different times and spaces along with ours, parallel universes, that we get a glimpse of, if we're invited or open to them, then you start thinking, well, if there's other times and spaces, then why is it such a leap to think that there might be other intelligences in those other times and spaces? And that's one of the main reasons that I shared the new data now in my new book that just came out last month, what's happened since I came forward after 7 years of anonymity in 2004, my photographic evidence that's been analyzed by Dr. Bruce McAbee, very respected Navy optical physicist and UFO researcher in the field, and he presented it actually in 1999 as the first photographic evidence of missing time at the MUFON International Symposium, Mutual UFO Network International Symposium in Washington, D.C. in 1999. So, you know, the reason that I'm sharing that data now is that maybe that's to help science along, to say, hey, you know, our linear time, our past, present, and future is primitive. That, again, there might be other realities out there that we're not being told about or that we don't realize in our culture that need to be addressed and studied.
I think that's very true. The Aborigines of Australia have a cave, and this was discovered. I don't remember. Maybe one of my listeners will. But I don't remember when it was discovered, but there was this awareness that they had an understanding of the systems, the star systems, that was way, way, way ahead of anything that we knew about. And I think just recently it actually has been confirmed. So there are these experiences of other beings from other places, if you will, that have left a legacy. And I know there probably will be some people listening to this that, come on, this sounds like a Star Trek special. Well, stop and think of Gene Roddenberry's perception regarding are going where no one else has dared to go before and being out there exploring. I mean, if that is in the psyche of one person here on this planet, and there are millions and millions and millions of people that are just real Trekkies, as they would be described, but they are aware, they believe, and I think that these concepts of different interactions with different types of people from different parts of the universe is not that far-fetched, and it's been in the psyche of people for a long time.
Right, you're absolutely right, Don.
So
and
there.
Just, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's just there.
Yeah,
so,
I've tried to be as scientific as I could with all this. When you look at the data, think about this. The Hubble telescope has just told us and showed us just in the last few decades that there are one Milky Way galaxy, and who knows how many trillions there are out there with planets and suns and all of that. Our one Milky Way galaxy is about 14 billion years old. Our solar system is a very young solar system. It's only 4 to 6 billion years old. So there are scientists out there now postulating that there could be intelligent, sentient life billions of years ahead of us. Because when you think of not only the building blocks of life being out, now that we know that amino acids are out in space, but we're just finding here on Earth how viable life is, not only in the frozen Arctic lakes and the hot springs of Yellowstone, but just recently we have found not just organisms, but actually beings, I guess you could call it, that are so deep in the sea that there is no sun. It is a very caustic, toxic environment, and they're very beautiful, actually, some of these creatures that they have found. So life is really viable everywhere, and I have to add this, too. You know, it took 17 centuries for humankind to realize that there are zillions of microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Some are beneficial, some are pathogens, but we've learned to live with them. And just in the past couple decades, we've learned that electromagnetic energy surrounds every living cell. Well, just because we can't see these tiny living organisms, there are entities that are living, or electromagnetic energies, or radio waves, or gamma rays, it doesn't mean it's not real. So, you know, it's time we get this out in the open and address it and accept it and study it so we can move forward and find out who's actually driving these things, and I think really move forward in our own evolution as well, because as you mentioned so poignantly, that these experiences, and it's not just near-death experience and out-of-body and unexplained aerial phenomena, you find when someone finds that they have a terminal disease, it really shocks our consciousness, and we see the world in a different way, and it really wakes us up to not only our connection to the universe, but also the connection to each other and to our Earth. And I have to say, too, that the message worldwide that's being given, and when you study near-death experiencers research and contact research time and time again, the message that's being given is wake up to what you're doing to yourselves and the planet before it's too late. And I think a lot of people are starting to wake up to that, don't you?
Well, I do think it's happening that way, and I think that the more that this can be discussed in an open format, it's like anything else. When you have technology that is advancing at such a rapid pace, and it is advancing with this speed so we can go down into the depths of ocean that nobody could have ever survived without robotics. At the same time, there is this old, what I call old mentality of me, Tarzan, you monkey over there, and we're going to, you know, bang each other with coconuts, but instead we're using nuclear missiles. This is something where this planet is so viable. And I think of the stories during the Second World War, where both sides saw something going on, and they go, where did this come from? It's almost like somebody put a holographic image in front of them to distort them, to distract them, not that it wasn't devastating anyway. However, there is, I think, an understanding that if people aren't smart enough, then you sort of put them in a situation where, okay, they blow each other up, a few survive, and we start all over again. Because I think this has happened on this planet so many times.
I talk about that in the book, absolutely.
Yeah, it's happened so many times.
It's found geodes, you know, evidence of a very advanced civilization. And even, you know, when you look at the pyramids, we can't build them today with the technology that we have.
Yes.
Where did they come from?
Yeah, there's so much. The intelligence factor that has demonstrated itself in South America, and I've known so many different people that have gone through different experiences, and I wanted to bring out one that you had in your book. There's a UFO researcher, one of the top ones, Jenny Randalls, you talk about, and she talks about how the British, see, what disturbs me is that there's so much myth out there because there are those circles of people that seem to think that the average individual just doesn't have the mentality even of a cockroach. Now, to me, cockroaches are pretty smart. You just don't know how to talk to them in cockroach. But,
and you got that right. You got that right. I think all animals can.
That's right. And so that they can't speak like we can in the sense that we speak and have language as we have language. But there are these small groups of people, and they try to take the dominant positioning and then tell everybody else, well, I'm sorry, but you're just, my goodness, you're just so inefficient. Everybody's going to panic. You know, you have all these stupid movies that go out, and it's everybody goes bonkers. Well, give me a break. We've got brain power, and the average individual I talk to, they say, oh, yeah, I believe that there are people that perhaps are even walking the planet that are from another place. And they'll do this, but they say, well, I wouldn't go public with it because I don't want to be thought of as being kooky. And I don't care what their cultural background is, what their religious background is. This is what they say in their own openness of conversation. And I just wish we could get rid of all this garbage. But let's go back to Jenny for a minute. She said that, she was talking about some cases, this is what you have in your book, as early as 1982, there was someone that had a near-death experience caused by a reaction to a drug that was administered to them by a dentist. They went out of their body, but instead of going into a world of light, you know, you have the Ghost Whisperer and all of these others that talk about the world of light. Well, that's fine. However, this person actually had an interaction with an alien. He entered a UFO. And he was given the message that the earth was in trouble and that he had to return. Now, some of you listening to this may say, Donna, this sounds like something out of La La Land. Why in the world are you talking about it? Because it's not just one person that's gone through these experiences.
Right, there's too much documentation out there, and that was one of the reasons I came forward. I mean, here it was very precarious for me to come forward with this information. That's why I did it. I squeezed the best of what I found. I went back to work to help put our younger son through medical school as a chief clinical consultant at the Arizona Heart Institute Wellness and Imaging Center and started paring down the book to the best of what I found. And, you know, after a while, when you really start studying this material, there's just so much data that is so compelling. And in fact, anybody that's on Facebook, if they want to, or I guess you could even get there from the internet, I have something posted that is very interesting that was just sent to me recently, a video that's on YouTube, but it combines some of the top people in the field, including the Vatican, okay, who are now saying that, you know, if God created Earth and people on Earth, why is it such a hard idea to, you know, take that jump and say that they created other beings out there that are brothers to us? I mean, even the Vatican is starting to make statements now, it feels like the last 50, 60 years since Roswell, we've been given misinformation and disinformation, but with all of that and ridicule and all that, but with that, we still, it started to seep in majorly now that we have the technology and people are carrying around cell phones and with cameras, they're capturing them on film, and it's no longer deniable or explainable. But nonetheless, more and more people, it's really seeping into the consciousness, and as more and more people, and that's the other reason I'm doing this. This is really a grassroots effort, and I applaud those that are trying to get the government and military to come forward, but they have a job to do. There's also, you know, power and greed in the mix. It's going to come from the people, I believe. The more people see things, the more people experience things, and the more people learn about it. The documentary itself, which you had mentioned earlier, really prompted me to leave the Arizona Heart Institute when I was invited to present at a middle school. And here are 200 middle school students on the edge of their chairs. It was the last period of the day. The teacher could not believe you could hear a pin drop. They thirst for this knowledge. And I realized there is nothing in our history books at all, nothing. And I'm actually, now that I have the book out there and the documentary, which is really an overview of the whole topic, to relay the topic and really as scientifically as we can, but also non-threateningly so people can learn about what happened here and also really the whole topic in general, because I knew nothing about it, so I'm trying to help others just educate themselves. And now I'm working on a curriculum for the classroom. There is nothing in the classroom, and that's the next big project for the Phoenix Lights Project, is to really get something that's viable in the classroom, so kids can start learning about crop circles. I mean, these orbs are seen hovering over fields worldwide, or even sand sometimes.
Yes.
And then crop circles form. Well, there seems to be a connection there as well, and it's beautiful artwork as well, and very mathematically complex in many cases. So, you know, in the math class, we can go over that, and they can learn about crop circles and history, certainly, as you mentioned. I mean, there is such a timeline of history here that is nowhere in the history books. English, for, you know, to really get their minds going. If somebody came to your door and it was another kind of being, how would you feel? How would that change our world to know,
Dr.
that
Lynn,
we are being visited, that we're not alone in the universe, and as well as conflict resolution.
Dr. Lynn, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stop you. We're out of time.
Oh, okay.
And I know it, you can tell Dr. Lynn is absolutely excited. This has been such a significant part of her life. Her book.
I'm a little passionate about it.
Yes, absolutely. The book is The Phoenix Lights. She has a website, thephoenixlights.net, that you can go to. Dr. Lynn, I want to thank you so much for being with me today. It's been absolutely wonderful. Your book is intriguing. Well done. And you've got a lot of references. You've got all kinds of sites that people can go to. So pick up her book, The Phoenix Lights. If you wanted to check out her website, thephoenixlights.net. Dr. Lynn, thank you very much for being my guest today. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sivo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to chat with me today, those telephone lines are now open. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number. That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or your initial. Then after that, you are welcome to ask me a question. After I give you the information I perceive, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that is on your mind that you're of, that you have an interest in. Animal, vegetable, mineral. It doesn't make any difference. Now, I want to let you know who's coming on this for the rest of the week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Bob Brill, Fan Letters to a Stripper. Sound like an unusual subject for the show? Well, it is. The book is magnificently illustrated, first class. Bob Brill is a fellow broadcaster and a man that came across a story that said that this story needs to be told. And it has a lot to do with the theme that I so often promote, and that is that one person really can make a difference in the life of another. So this is a fascinating interview that we're going to have tomorrow. Then we're going to be talking with Kamara Lamothe on Thursday, What a Body Knows. How do you get in tune with yourself? How do you know how to read what your body tells you? What's good for you? What isn't? Well, we're going to find out on Thursday. And then Friday, Drunk with Wonder. Steve Ryle's going to be my guest. Steve has had a number of experiences of his own, and it's all about realizing how rich your life really is. Donna Sebo here. We are going to go to our first caller today, which don't forget, if you want to call in, 888-815-9756. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good evening. My name is FL. I call from New York.
Okay, are you in New York City?
Yes.
Wonderful. All right, FL, the first thing I'm looking at is I don't want you to be extremely worried about money. You're going to have an ample amount. That's the word that I will use. You will need, though, to look at certain areas for financial investment that you are really going to want to learn about. Now, you're a very intelligent woman, and there are things that you feel like you really want to do with your life. You've got some relationships that are irritants, but they're not that bad, really. You are, however, at a crossroads in your life because you realize that certain levels of responsibility in your life are changing, and you really want to be alert and aware of what you should go into. It's as if you want to take advantage of this moment and not just worry about what somebody else thinks is right for you, but to do what is right for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is always a big challenge because as women, usually we're going to put somebody else before ourselves, and that's something that you're learning how to not do. And it's taken you a long time to get to that point, so I'm going to congratulate you. You're doing a good job. So be all right with the fact that this year is sort of going to be a year of exploration. This is a year of questions. This is a year where maybe you talk with people that have an expertise that you admire to find out if maybe you'd like to do what they do. And if not, then you go and you talk to somebody else. But you don't try to put yourself into a box this year. You don't try to put yourself, maybe a better word is a capsule. You want to be free to explore, examine, question, and then prioritize. And I actually think if you did a vocational aptitude test, an assessment test, that might assist you to even get things going much more rapidly. But I do think that there is going to be a consideration for leaving New York City. Now, that is not a bad place to be. It's okay. You've enjoyed it to a point. But I really think you're wanting to change things in your life. It almost, I'll use an example of someone that maybe is like an artist that says, well, I want to live out in the country and I want to be in a place where I can have my own little spot and I can watch the ocean every day. And I'm using that as an example. It's not going to detach you permanently from the big city, but there is something in you that I think is calling to the artist within you. And this, I think, needs to be honored and to be respected. By the way, you have got some family genealogy that you're going to learn about. It's really going to be a surprise. Someone you know is going to do some genealogy study. And you're going to say, oh, well, why don't you check on certain things with my family? And when you find out certain points of information, it's absolutely going to amaze you. You're going to say, that couldn't be possible, but it will be. So we all have in our family trees somewhere along the line interesting characters that have done some interesting things, and it's the same with you. So I think you're going to find these next 3 to 5 years quite interesting. What would you like to ask me today?
Yes, I would like to ask you, I'm going to have a business, like we are applying. Do you think it's a good investment?
What kind of business
family.
Is it? Okay, what kind of a business is it?
Liquor store.
A liquor store. All right, you really need to ask about this. Don't put your money into it yet. The reason being, you need to find out what your tax laws are and what all of the different regulations are. Now, I don't know why you have decided to explore this. Maybe you think it's a good way to make a lot of money. But there are so many changes that are occurring that in the political arena, that those people having liquor stores are really going to be going through some challenges that they've not had in the past. So I think there's going to be very, very stiff regulation. So you need to talk with some people. Has anyone in your family been associated with or worked with a liquor store?
Yes.
Okay.
My relative.
All right. I would say you've got to do the homework so that you really examine if this is really what you want to do. I'm not especially excited about it because I think that there's going to be a liability level that you do not understand. So I would like very much for you to not rely on your relative's knowledge. I want you to do your own homework.
Okay.
Because you need to know about the liability positioning. Also, what concerns me is the contract that needs to be signed, that needs to be set up. You need to have a good attorney.
Yes, we got good attorney.
All right.
American people, yeah.
Okay, so if you've got a good attorney, you need to have conversations with the attorney. And you cannot be the naive female here. How much money are you looking at putting into it?
$300,000, they said.
$300,000?
25 to 3, yeah.
Okay. Yes, it's very expensive. So I think you really need to look at this with eyes wide open and ask questions. I wouldn't put that kind of money into it unless you really understood it.
Yeah.
And I mean that sincerely.
Yeah,
this person could be a saint. I wouldn't care. I'd still say the same thing to you.
Yes.
Because I think you're wanting to do it on trust. And you need to know how the records are going to be kept. You're going to need to know how all of the money's going to be accounted for. You need to know how it's going to be spent. So I think this is a real educational curve for you. I wouldn't be in a hurry on this.
Yeah. We are applying. They need 7 months. We just apply for 3 months.
Well, I think you need to educate yourself.
Okay.
I really mean that most sincerely.
Yes.
And I want to thank you for your call today, and I wish you the best.
Oh, I thank you.
You're very welcome.
Have a nice evening. All
Thank
okay.
you. You have a wonderful evening yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your call.
Okay.
This is Donna Siebel,
okay,
and I know we're
so going
to be going to a break fairly soon, so if you want to call in and chat with me, I really would like for you to write down the number of 888-815-9756, but also I want to mention something else. I am collecting 100 stories about the paranormal. If you have had an experience with a ghost, if there has been someone from your family that passed over, that visited you, or you've had an out-of-the-body experience, anything that for you that was really significant, if you would like to submit that story, this is going to be going to a publishing house in a year, and I really think that this is something that people will be very grateful to read about, because the more we can communicate and talk about what we experience and go through in life, the less fear we will have about it. And instead of thinking it's something that's supernatural, we realize it's super and very, very normal. So send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And be sure to include your contact information, because that is going to be very valuable to us, because we're going to want to be in touch with you once we're getting ready to go to publication. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. We're taking a break, but you can call in if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight at 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Siebel's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Siebel and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Okay, I want you to get the pad of paper and a pen. I have got a recipe here, almond ciabatta French toast. You know, French toast is something I really didn't like very often until I had a good recipe for French toast. And I find many times it's the bread that you use. I mean, I have had French toast that I thought could be used as a hockey puck. So I go, oh, yeah, you know, no flavor, nothing to it. But by golly, this one has got some flavor. And I want you to know you want to use real maple syrup with this. Good stuff. I mean, heck, if you're going to really splurge, let's do it good, okay? You want the real stuff. Let me give you this recipe. It is absolutely marvelous. Perfect for that Sunday breakfast. If you're anything like me, maybe you try to be real good all week long where you're not doing too much, but there's something about a nice Sunday morning breakfast where you take the time, and I like to do this. This is part of our tradition in our home, where I'll fix a big Sunday breakfast, and then we'll chat, we'll talk, we'll visit, and many times my husband just loves to have me read to him because he likes the way I read, and we talk about all kinds of subject matter, as if I'm ever lacking in that with 400 to 600 books received a year. So it's just it's a wonderful thing, but good food really makes a difference. How about something not only is it going to smell absolutely marvelous, it's going to taste good too. And the ciabatta bread makes the difference. Why? Because of the texture. Now, I heard the beep, and I know we've got a caller. So keep that pad of paper handy and that pen, because I'm going to share the almond ciabatta French toast recipe with you. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. This is Lisa. How are you?
Well, I am absolutely magnificent, Lisa. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we've actually got blue skies. The storms have gone through, and we've got some more coming in. But right now, it's absolutely gorgeous. The daffodils are just busting their yellow buttons, just shining and sparkling. And the tulips are coming up here. Oh, it's gorgeous.
Well,
how about you?
I'm happy to say in Michigan, we're not far behind, so it's a beautiful 72, so that's good.
Oh, wait a minute. You said, did I hear right, 72 degrees?
Yes.
That's not below zero, that's above zero.
Correct.
You've got to bowl me in Michigan. My goodness, you've got summer weather. Oh, for heaven's sake.
Well, I'm just going to appreciate it, and I'm going to try to understand it, just appreciate it.
Absolutely. Be present with when it hits. And it's the same thing here in the Northwest. When it's gorgeous, it's gorgeous, and we all say, this is it. That's why if the sun comes out and it shines here, if anybody's got a seminar or something going, forget it. Skip the whole thing and go on out and join the rest of the crowd, because nobody's going to attend when the sun comes out. It's just absolutely amazing. Well, Lisa, where are you in Michigan?
In Farmington Hill.
All right, let's get started with you. The first thing I am looking at is you are going to find yourself, Lisa, having to really pay attention to finances. And the reason you're going to need to pay attention to finances is that there is a plan of action and investment that's going to come up. I'm getting the number 3, so I think it's within 3 years. I don't think it's 3 months. I think it's within 3 years. And you need to save as much money as you possibly can. Now, you know how to make a penny do a tap dance. So I'm not worried about your being consistently persistent about doing what needs to be done with the saving of money. My concern is that you would not allow that you might need some extra money just for yourself just to play. So in your savings plan, give yourself some elbow room. Be consistent with it. Get your loans down and out of the way. If that's a home loan, pay against your principal. Build up the equity there. Because whatever this investment is, and I'm not seeing it, I'm not being shown the information, but whatever this is, cash is going to talk loudly in 3 years. So you'll be in a very good negotiating positioning. You also need some dental work. I'm looking at some a need for you to go into the dentist, and there may be a suggestion of a root canal, and I'd ask what other options you would have, because there may be something else that can be done that would maybe eliminate the need eventually for a root canal. But it's something that you have to explore, and you have to ask the questions. They're not going to just automatically answer it for you. So you need to be very attentive to your teeth, because they are going to have to be repaired. What's on your mind? What did you want to ask me, Lisa?
Well, I have a friend who's overseas right now,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be coming home in about a month, I hope. And I just wondered, do you see us getting our friendship on a good way back
well,
on track?
I think that with the friendship, you just need to sort of relax about the whole thing. This individual is almost, not quite, but almost to the point of feeling overwhelmed. So it's as if when they get home, there is a wisdom side of the self that says, slow down, relax, don't try to push. But they are on, I got to get it done now, speed. And so consequently, you may not find them interacting with you very much. I wouldn't take it personally. I really wouldn't.
Okay.
I would just say, this is fine. You know, however it works out, I'm so glad you're home, safe and sound. Just know that if you want to give me a call, you can. And that's, you know, that's just how simple that needs to be. I think it's going to take them, believe it or not, almost a good 8 to 9 months to finally feel like they are in the rhythm they should be in for themselves.
Okay.
All right, my dear. I want to thank you for calling.
All right. Take care and thank you.
You're very welcome, Lisa. Enjoy that 72 degrees. Oh, that's so great. We're in the 50s here. This is Donna Sebo. I've got enough time. Let me give you this recipe. If you got that pad of paper and pen handy, this is what you're going to need for the almond ciabatta French toast. 3 eggs. They need to be at room temperature, by the way. 3 eggs, 3 tablespoons of sugar, 3 tablespoons of sugar, 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1 1/4 cups of milk, 1 1/4 cups of milk. This is a good section. 1 1/4 cup of heavy cream makes all the difference in the world. You're going to need 8 slices, 1 inch thick, of ciabatta bread. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, and then 1 cup of sliced almonds, and of course, the real stuff, maple syrup, or whatever your fresh syrup might be that you would just love. Now, in a medium bowl, what you're going to do, you want to beat your eggs until they're combined. You beat in your sugar, vanilla, almond extract, and salt. I'd say toss it in the blender. Make it easy. Then gradually beat in the milk and cream until it's smooth, and put this in a shallow baking dish. Now, you can work in batches if necessary, depending on the size of your pan. You want to place the bread slices in the egg mixture and soak for 3 minutes, and then turn it over and soak for another 3 minutes. And then you're ready to cook it. 1 tablespoon of butter on your griddle over medium-low heat, or in a large nonstick skillet over medium heat. And you put the butter in there and let it start bubbling. And then you know it's time for you to put in that soaked bread. Now, just before you put the soaked bread on the griddle, you want to put the almonds on the griddle in a single layer, forming an area the size and shape of a bread slice. But you want to make it dense. And then you put one side of bread into the almonds, cook until golden brown, flip the bread slices, cook until they're speckled and golden brown. And you keep doing that until it's all done. And I'll give you another tip. Uh-oh, I'm out of time. Do it the night before, and the bread will be all just soaked wonderfully. This is Donna Sebo. I gotta go. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy. Life is rich with opportunity and gifts. Don't be afraid to accept all of it with grace. This is Donna Sebo. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.